Once I'd like to have somebody come rushing up to me with a microphone, you know, like Gabe Pressman. I'd say, Mr. Shepard, do you have a statement to make on the developments? And then this is what I really hope for, you see, what I really dream of. I wave my hand casually and hurry off into the conference room carrying my black attaché case, and I say, no comment at this time. We are considering it. Oh, man, dreams of glory. I'll tell you, hey, listen, we got a short show tonight. It's been a long time since we've been short-sheeted. And let's get with them commercials real quick to get them out of the way. Let's see. How about a little of that Oriental strut, Nick? Over here. There's a little of that Oriental strut here. Let's give them... Yes. This is a commercial. A beautifully dressed oompa band. A string ensemble that makes beautiful music. A wonderful, festive, old-world atmosphere and a superb dinner of Bavarian or continental specialties. Put them all together and they spell M-O-T-H-E-R-S. Mother's Day at Luchow's. Mother's Day Luchow's style also means a surprise gift for Mother. Yes, Luchow's is doing everything it can to put together, quote, the greatest Mother's Day Mother has ever had. All for $7.50 per adult. There's also a special family plan in effect for children under 12 at the 12 noon and 1:30 p.m. seatings. First child free, second child $1, third child or more. Oh, boy, that sounds like bad news. $3.95 for a delightful day filled with fabulous food and fun. Make your Mother's Day reservations now at Luchow's, 110 East 14th Street, New York City, of course, Fun Town. Call Gramercy 74860. Gramercy 74860. It all spells M-O-T-H-E-R-R-S. Thank you, Nick. Reset that, please. Mother's Day. Blood. You know, it's getting to the point now where you have to be very careful how you say that word on radio. Some people would watch. I'm going to immediately get letters saying I was obscene.
Don't worry, I know what mother means.
What a time we're living in, I'll tell you. Hey, you know, we are living in fascinating, exciting times. And among other things, let's see, car owners, we're getting our little commercials out of the way here quick, make sure that everything's under control. Car owners, Sears has the tire that you should have on your car, you know, the Dyna-Glass Sealant White Wall Tire. It's constructed with two fiberglass belts plus four rugged polyester cord plies for strength, as they say in Indiana, strength and long life, and an inner sealer that keeps the air in. That's something where you want, certainly, on your tire. Keeps the air in. It also clings to nails. That's kind of nice. And other foreign objects, and allows you to keep right on rolling in your dynamic way. You save 25% now through Saturday on your size. Now's the time to buy a tougher, safer 40-month tire. Hurry to Sears. Use Sears. Easy payment plan. Are you running your life on the easy payment plan, friends? Or do you have a secret fear that one day when you get up before them pearly gates and St. Peter looks down from that great big fantastic desk where all the final judging is done, and he's looking through his big book, and he says, little echo chamber, Nick. Ah, Charles Dildock, hey, let's see, Charlie Dildock. Yes, Charlie. Here is your page. Well, for heaven's sakes, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pages of sins. Well, Charlie, that's 4.5 pages over the Absolute basic minimum. 4.5 pages of extra sins for you, Charlie. Well, you're going to have to pay for your sins. And you look up and say, St. Peter, just a minute. And you reach into your pocket and you pull out your wallet, your Playboy wallet with the Playboy insignia on it, you know. And you reach in, you pull out your Playboy wallet and say, do you guys here take American Express or do you take Diner's Club? And then, wham! And St. Peter says, carte blanche here. We do not honor American Express or Diner's Club or Howard Johnson credit cards. It is carte blanche all the way. We live in strange times. Well, by the way, speaking of strange times, we want to salute, there's all kinds of sicknesses in this world. We'd like to salute the gentleman in Dewsbury, England. It's not easy living in Dewsbury under any condition, but June Grace's birthday present to her husband exhausted him so much that he could barely blow out the candles.
It's just what I've always wanted,
said Gerald Grace, a 30-year-old coal miner, after he made his way around a British Army assault course yesterday.
Gee, you know, I've seen these obstacle courses at the cinema. Oh, I wonder if I could get around one.
June arranged with the Ministry of Defense for him to find out, and a squad of recruits standing at the beginning of the assault obstacle course sang, "Happy birthday to you, happy birthday." You know how they sing over there with Andy Capp leading the chorus? "Happy birthday to you," as Gerald started off. He slogged around a running track of deep mud, clambered over fences and walls, writhed on his stomach under coils of barbed wire, swung 30 feet in the air on a rope, and fell waist-deep in a pond. And then the Army gave him a birthday cake and sent him off to his coal mine. Oh, geez. What a sensational idea for a Christmas or a birthday gift. That opens up a whole new idea, you know, a whole new area. Most people think of things for gifts, you know. Why don't you give a friend of yours an event for a birthday gift? Now, for example, if you have a masochistic friend, and there's a lot of masochistic people around, you know, who feel guilt about everything and, you know, the whole bit, you know, oh, I did it all, you know. They feel guilt for Attila the Hun. They feel guilt for slavery, the whole bit. See, well, that's, universal guilt is a problem today. So if you have a friend who is masochistic, you understand giving him something good for his birthday is an offense to a masochistic person because he has to feel, you know, that basically the world is rotten, and that's part of masochism. The world is rotten, and they're after him specifically, and he secretly wishes they'd catch him because he's so rotten himself, see? So this is the problem of masochists. So what you ought to do, there's a big birthday party, and Charlie the masochist is there. He's got all his copies, you know, of these angry magazines, you know, about how rotten the world is, and you're all standing around under the chandelier there, and everybody's singing, "Happy birthday, dear Charlie, happy birthday." Of course, which is a terrible thing to say to a masochist. Happy is a rotten word to come up with, masochist. "Happy birthday to you, dear Charlie. Happy birthday, dear Charlie. Happy birthday to you." And then everybody cheers, and then somebody has to always start singing something like, "For he's a jolly good fellow." Well, you can't say that for a guy who is spending his life reading the Village Voice. Nobody wants to be called a jolly good fellow, for crying out. "For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly..." Now, you're ready to give him his Christmas or his whatever the gift happens to be, particularly birthday, see? And Charlie's standing there saying, "Oh, come on, you guys. Get off my back, will you? Come on, you know. After all, birthday's a drag. Oh, wow, man." And you say, "Charlie, I've been thinking for a week what gift to give you for your birthday that you would appreciate most of all." And he says, "Oh, come on, man. You shouldn't have done it." And with that, you say, "Well, I'm going to do it because of I know what you want most of all." And you draw back your right fist and pow! You give him a shot right in the teeth. There is nothing that a masochist likes better than a good shot in the teeth. See, and his teeth fly all over the place and he staggers back. And it is that moment that he knows the world is really basically rotten, and that makes him happier than anything else. So give your friend an event for birthday. We're going to take that, Nick. We're going to play this little bippy here. Dick. Thank you, Brother Dick. Real nice, wasn't it? Give your friend an event. So speaking of events, let's see. Got the little Dr. Pepper marching song, please?
Good morning. It is dawn. I am speaking to you from a deserted field somewhere in the western United States. As I look around, I can see the men and mechanics of Dr. Pepper waiting anxiously around their trucks. Eddie, Dr. Pepper's most veteran driver, stands near the fire as the kid, his first run before him, turns and says,
Gee, Eddie, I hope there won't be any trouble.
Don't worry, kid.
Dawn is beginning to lighten the eastern sky as everyone waits to hear the final words from the captain before they leave for New York.
Men of the Dr. Pepper squadron, this is the captain. You have all received your orders. The road ahead will not be easy, but knowing you as I am, I am confident that despite the pitfalls and misunderstandings each of you shall face, you shall take Dr. Pepper to New York in victory. Nothing can stop us now.
There you have it. The trucks are speeding off with the words of the captain ringing in the ears of every driver. Dr. Pepper's coming to New York, May 18th. Nothing can stop us now.
Look out, they're moving in on you. Everywhere you look. Speaking of giving events to people, giving them secretly what they want, which nobody has the guts to ask for, did I ever tell you about the time that I actually saw that happen? We had this very conservative guy who worked at this office. Working at the radio station, had a very conservative guy working there in the office, and they had a birthday party for him. Well, you know, there are certain kinds of people who because of their basic insecurities, become extremely conservative. They wear gray suits and they have gray looks on their faces, and they hope that by coming invisible, nothing can happen to them. Listen, I know a guy that got to be the vice president of a vast concern because he was invisible. Whenever they were trying to fire somebody, he just disappeared right into the woodwork. It was fantastic. How many of you have had this basic urge, which is basic to all of us, really secretly? How many of you had it recently? The desire to be invisible and to float through walls, cackle. some people can do it. It's not hard to do if you learn how to move quickly, and it's a matter of the way you use your eyes too. Anybody who has ever stood in a squad of soldiers that's about to be divided up into you guys going to clean the grease traps, and the other guys can go and hang around the USO. You learn how not to be picked, and it's quite a trick. You can stand right in front of a first sergeant and he can't see you. Your eyes are moving shiftily, and you keep fading in and out, in and out. it's not easy. Speaking of living in perilous times, which, of course, we are. There's no question about it. But then again, everybody always has. I can't see, a guy say, hey, did you ever hear the old Chinese curse, great Chinese curse? It may be of some solace to you in these perilous times. And there's an old Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting days. That's a curse in China, Well, all right, you're living in interesting days, friend. You know what they mean, right? But nevertheless, we are living in perilous times in many ways. And a couple of weeks ago, I was doing, to give you an idea how peculiar things are getting, I was doing a college show at the school outside of Philadelphia. And before the show, we had a big like a cocktail party or something for the show, and the faculty were in there, and I'm walking around trying to pass, for an intellectual and stuff, and it's not easy, boy, when you're faking it. And I'm walking around, is it, friend? I'm walking around, through a hooker. I didn't expect that, did they? Oh, no, they never do. And I was walking around in this crowd, see, carrying this lukewarm glass of drugstore sherry, which they always give you at these elegant soirees, with a limp piece of lemon peeling floating around in it, see? Had feet, this piece of lemon. So I'm walking around. They'd used it at a previous party, see? They ring it out. So I'm walking around looking very intellectual, saying things like, well, of course, Kierkegaard never matured. That was his basic problem. And the people all say, yeah, man, hey, yeah, hallelujah. So I got talking to this one lady who was in the literature department, see? And I said, She says, who is one of your favorite writers? And I said, well, I have to confess, Mark Twain, actually. She said, oh, Mark Twain? I said, yes. Well, we don't read Mark Twain here, you know. This is a liberal institution. He's banned here. I said, Mark Twain is banned here? That's liberal. Sure, I can see that. Wide open, huh? And, yes, we can't. Boy, that's bad news, Mark Twain. Well, so Mark Twain is banned. Well, I said, well, geez, now I'm going to be next. So Mark Twain was banned. Well, I was expected to applaud this, you know, as a forward move. And book burning is always applauded among certain people as a forward move. So Mark Twain was burned, and or at least banned at this school. So I was curious. I said, well, actually, there's other books that I dig, too. You know, I must admit that have influenced me heavily in my, you know, my thinking about the world. And I didn't tell her about the Johnson and Smith catalog, you know, with the whoopee cushions, which has definitely influenced me. It's a famous catalog, you know, it's full with this exploding cigars and stuff like whoopee cushions and little wax mice that you pull across the floor, you know, to scare people. And you can even get little plastic things, you know, that you can put under people's coffee tables that look like a little doggy's been around. You know, I just love this stuff, see. So I didn't tell her about that because I could see this is one of those very serious ladies, and you know, certain people, very serious. And so I didn't tell her that Johnson and Smith influenced me. So I said, of course, immediately I thought, well, maybe I'll tell her about the Sears Roebuck catalog influenced me, too, the lingerie section. And so I didn't tell her that. So I couldn't think of a book that influenced me. Finally, I said, another book influenced me. Well, I don't blame you about Twain. Another book influenced me, The Wizard of Oz. You know, Dorothy in the Land of Oz. She said, no, really? I said, yes. Oh, we don't allow that sort of thing. Actually, you know, that's basically unrealistic escapist literature. I said, oh, by George, I'm sorry. And of course, I think many things are basic, unrealistic escapist literature. I think Catch-22 is. I think, you know, it really is. I think most things are basic escape literature. And so I didn't know what to say. There, two of my books were banned right off the bat, you know. Mark Twain was banned, and the Wizard of Oz is banned. So the only thing I could think of then, I'm really reaching, see, I says, well, all right, I said, you banned them two. You banned those two. By the way, it's very in now to use bad English, so it's all right, friends. So I says, you know, you banned them, okay. Banned them two books. Well, how about Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy and a Camel with the Wrinkled Knees? I says, well, please. I said, well, I'm sorry. You know, I can see her face is getting kind of purple. Where? And I said, well, what's the matter with that? Look, Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy and the Camel with the Wrinkled Knees. For heaven's sakes, this is the fantasy syndrome full blown. And, of course, we're living in a real world, and we want to teach the children from the very beginning that life is real, life is earnest, and that we can't allow them to spend their time reading that sort of thing. Well, what could I say? I mean, here I was, three of my favorite books, down the draino, zap. I mean, you know, Life on the Mississippi, forget Itsville. I mean, that's down the drain. And then, you know, I thought I'd come back with the Yellow Brick Road and the Tin Woodman, and that's gone, too. I mean, after all, the Tin Woodman did have a heart, you know, even if it was a fake one. And you don't have any of those in any of the, you know, the contemporary books. The only people who got hearts are supposedly the readers, you see, the people, you know, who are so... And so I thought about that, and I thought to myself, well, you know, I may be quite the last person in the history of Western, I almost said jurisprudence, quite possibly the only person in the history of Western, whatever it is, who is going to read to you a brief passage out of Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy and the Camel with the Wrinkled Knees. Would you like to hear the opening lines of a book that is banned? This libel cost me my whole, you know, my license in the liberal community. Would you, by the way, we have licenses. Bring it down there, please. A little honking music there. Yeah. Oh, I used a bad word. Bring it up there. Listen to this honky playing that thing. Come on, bring it up. Raggedy Ann and Andy and the Camel with the Wrinkled Knees. I'll award a brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm if any of you can tell me the name of the writer who wrote these classics. You know, all the nice people have Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy dolls, which they buy at the F.A.O. Schwartz. But not many of them ever actually read or heard the story itself, right? Okay. This stuff gets more to the nitty-gritty than Winnie the Pooh ever did, friends. And I want to give you a little introduction to it. Do you know who wrote them? Now, there's a guy that created a classic, and nobody knows his name, all right? And it is a man, by the way. And he dedicates the book to Marcella Matthews. And this book was sent to me by a listener type, and she included a note. She says, I had to get this filthy thing out of my house because I didn't want any of the kids to find it. Never, you know, the next thing you know, their mind is going to be rotted. And instead of sitting around reading The Village of each other and Evo, you know, they're going to be reading Raggedy Ann, Raggedy Andy, and their mind is going to be rotted doing that. Let them get back to their Krasner. So here it goes, Raggedy Ann and Andy, and the camel with the wrinkled knees. By the way, inside, it's got a great signature, see it there? And it's written in a real kid hand. It says, Linda, grade 3C. And under it, it says, Mrs. Campbell. Wherever Mrs. Campbell is today, we salute you. Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy lay in their little doll beds, smiling up through the dark at the top of the playhouse. It was still and very quiet in the playhouse, but the Raggedys were not even a teeny-weeny speck lonesome, for they were thinking so many nice, kindly thoughts. Forget it. I can see already. This is not going to go with anybody who's read Portnoy's Complaint. I mean, Portnoy does not think nice, kindly thoughts about anybody, especially if it spells M-O-T-H-E-R, mother. Hey, I wonder if Philip Roth is going to take his old lady to Luchow's this year. Just a question there. It says, it was very still and quiet in the playhouse, but the Raggedys were not even a teeny-weeny speck lonesome, for they were thinking so many nice, kindly thoughts. And you know, when one thinks only lovely, kindly thoughts, there is no time to become lonesome. Oh, boy, that isn't subversive. The playhouse was an old piano box and was all fixed up, nice and cozy. There was an old rug upon the floor, two doll beds, three little chairs, a table with a pretty little play teacup and saucer and plates on it. Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy lay upon the doll beds, just where, who was the heroine of the Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy stories? Who was the Christopher Robin of those stories? You know, there was Christopher Robin was human in the Winnie the Pooh stories. And his friends were all these little animals. Well, there was a Christopher Robin in the Winnie the Pooh, in the Raggedy Ann, Raggedy Ann. All right, I'll let you think about that, you know, if you think you really know things. So I'll just, I'll put a little blank in there, a little bippy in there. See, I'll bip it out. Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy lay upon the doll beds just where Boop Boop had left them that afternoon. I do that good, don't I? See, you notice how well, what a firm grasp I have of bad English usage? I am way ahead of my time, friends, in this day of the advancing barbarism and the neo-bourgeoisie. And, I'm practicing, though. One of Raggedy Ann's legs was twisted up over the other, but it wasn't the least bit uncomfortable, for Raggedy Ann's legs were stuffed with nice white cotton, and they could be twisted in every position, and it did not trouble Raggedy Ann. No, indeed. Neither Raggedy Ann nor Raggedy Andy had moved since they'd been placed in the little doll beds, and now it was late at night. Boop Boop had forgotten to take the Raggedys into the house. But the Raggedys didn't mind that either. They just smiled up at the top of the playhouse and listened to the tiny sounds which came from the little creatures out in the grass and the flowers and the birds and the crickets. Isn't that something? You can just see why that would rot people's minds. I mean, because, you know, first of all, it's basically positive. And Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy didn't feel sorry for themselves because they'd been left out there in the dark by Boop-boop, who obviously was the mother figure and very aggressive and left them out in the dark like that, Boop-boop, so they could think evil thoughts and learn eventually to write a great novel, which would prove that mother, in the guise of Boop-boop, was ultimately the eternal evil villain of them all. By the way, how about a great play about Hitler's mother? I mean, that would be the final statement of that. And so tonight, we salute Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy and the Cabin with the Wrinkled Knees. We salute Mark Twain. We salute Frank Baum, who wrote the Oz stories with the Yellow Brick Road and the Tin Woodman and the Scarecrow, who was always searching for brains and never found them. And the great wizard who gave everybody green glasses so they would believe that they were living in the middle of a city made entirely of emeralds. So we salute all you crowd as you go into the flames, burning higher and higher and higher. Life is earnest. Life is real. Nah, indeed. And by the way, that's the name of a law firm down on 14 Broad Street. Life, earnest, and real. Bring it up big there. Bring it up big. We're going to be here tomorrow night at 5 minutes past 10, and you better be here or I'll break your... Boop, boop. Don't forget that.